Hey everybody, it's Michelle. I am here to talk to you about our Patreon page. This is the page that you can go to help support our podcast with a monthly donation. When you commit to supporting us, you can get additional bonus content such as extra podcasts, our favorite playlists, our show notes, and eventually we would like to have merchandise to sell like t-shirts and baseball caps, and we would let you have first dibs at those. Of course, because we are coffee moms, we are offering membership levels that are as follows: the coffee membership, the cold brew membership, or the espresso membership. Now, no pressure whatsoever, but if you do love our podcast and you would like to help support it, you can go to patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. That is Patreon, patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. There you can choose a membership level that works for you. Melissa and I want to thank you in advance for your love and your support.
Messy Bun Mamas. I'm Joe.
I'm John.
I am Malcolm.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Michelle.
And this is the Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
Yay.
So today we have our guest Cammie here with us, and she's going to tell us her story about infant loss. But first, Mama Moment of the Week.
Can I start this one? Because I have an amazing story to tell.
Yes.
So Joe was sick, and he it ended up being RSV, which is just going around with everybody right now, but it still like petrifies me when I hear that word, just because that's what he had. He had RSV
when he was
pneumonia
in the hospital.
When he went into the hospital. So when we got the test results back saying that he had RSV, it was late at night, but I immediately called the on-call nurse and talked to her just to get some comfort and that maybe I was trying to do all the right things and everything. And I was talking to her and she was asking me, she says, well, is he sleeping well now? And I said, well, when I first put him to bed, he was whimpering. And when he would take in breaths, I could hear like rattling and stuff. And I said, that really concerned me. I said, yeah. But about an hour after he fell asleep, he woke up and had like this huge coughing fit. It was such a big coughing fit. He cried and everything. And so, but after he had that coughing fit, he fell right to sleep and he's been almost sleeping peacefully at this point. And she said, oh, he must have coughed up a mucus plug.
Did you say this is a nurse?
I was so glad. No, wait, because there's more to the story. I was like taken aback, and like I even asked one of my friends who is a volunteer fire EMS worker, and I'm like, hey, do you guys use this term when you're talking about transporting a kid that's coughing up goobs of stuff? And she's like, no, that is not a thing. We have never used that word. So I was like, whew, this is cool. So at the beginning of this week, I took Joe to his 5-year-old well checkup. And I was talking to the doctor and I was telling her the same thing. And I was saying, you know, when I put him to bed, he was whimpering and not breathing really well. And I was super concerned. I said, about an hour later, he woke up and had this huge coughing fit. And then it seemed like it was just all done. And she looked me dead in the eyes and she said, well, he must have coughed up like a mucus plug or something. I'm like,
what?
We need to talk. talk to all of you. We need to just like have an across the board meeting with all you doctors, because I cannot seriously have a conversation with you talking about my son coughing up a mucus plug when the only time I've heard reference to a mucus plug is the thing that comes out of my hoo-ha when I'm about to have a baby.
Yes! Like, what is that?
I do not want to equate the thing that's coming out of my son's lungs to the something that comes out of a lady's hoo-ha.
I am like, I have never heard that.
So,
I wonder if it's like a doctor at your practice and they just kind of like got everybody to start saying it.
That's it. I mean, it was the same clinic. It was a nurse on call for that clinic that I had talked to. So maybe it is
so weird, like,
for though. Them. But I have never, ever heard, because like I used to get bronchitis and sinus infections, and I'm used to like that type of having that. I've never heard a doctor refer to the stuff that you cough up as a mucus plug. I cannot take it seriously. I'm like,
I would have busted out laughing. Did you bust out laughing?
I kind of smirked. I just kind of like laughed
and like giggled, like you were like a 12-year-old boy. You're just like,
basically.
Because what do you do?
So today we have a guest with us.
Yay! One of my favorite people.
So this is the famous lady that Michelle talks about that teaches table talk at our church.
All the time. I do. Like once a month I reference table talks.
Well, Cammy gives us such wisdom. Thank you. So in continuing our series on pregnancy and infant loss, we have Cammy with us today to discuss her experience. It's a little heavy. I've actually never heard it before, so I'm kind of both terrified and excited.
I didn't even realize you hadn't heard it.
Yeah.
It's a good story. It is. It's really, as we were just discussing before we started, I've heard it twice, and it makes me cry just to know all those feelings, all those things that she had to process, and just how God can do great things.
Mm-hmm. I'm honored. So, grab your tissues. It's going to be a wild ride.
You want me to jump in?
Yes.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cammy. I'm so honored to be on the Messy Bun podcast. Man, I know y'all are loving them, and I'm loving them. I get to know them personally, so these are two quality women. Thank you for having me today. So I'll kind of jump in with my story. So I had, I think I struggled with the terminology piece. We were kind of struggling with that. Earlier, I wouldn't call what I had a miscarriage. I was 26 weeks pregnant, and I had a routine appointment actually at that time. I think I had missed my 24th week or something because I was out of town. So they moved it 26 weeks. And I'm just, especially when it's your first child, you have a lot of hope and you're not necessarily jaded, especially if you haven't had a loss. You're just da-da-da going in. I went in without my husband thinking, oh, like, I got this. He wasn't there. Crazy to think that that's the appointment he didn't make, you know? So I was by myself laying on the table and they were struggling to find the heartbeat. They were using, I guess, the Doppler is what it's called. Mm-hmm. Looking all around, they couldn't find the heartbeat. And I'll never forget how, when I look back at myself, I always think I was in a utopian society. I feel like I was, so rose-colored glasses that it wasn't even possible that something was wrong. I didn't even compute it. So when he says, I'm sorry, she, when she says to me, you know what, we're going to have to do an ultrasound. They really just can't find this heartbeat and had been looking for a good 5 minutes. I'm still sitting there, laying there, relaxed, smiling like, okay. And you know, my first thought was, yay, we get to find the gender.
All right.
Baby. We get to find the gender because we had tried to define that 20 weeks of the anatomy scan of this baby. The legs were crossed, and I mean, I was doing crazy stuff. I was on the ground jiggling, drinking orange juice, doing whatever, and this baby would not uncross. So I never knew what the baby was. I had a whole gender reveal party, and it was like, I came home and I'm like, sorry, I don't know what the baby is. Cry. I was so devastated. All these little dreams, whatever. So yeah. Anyways, that was one huge disappointment from the beginning. So I called my husband. I was like, hey, I'm going to have an ultrasound. Do you want me to, you want to know? Because they're going to ask if we want to know. that's what's going on in my head, just sheer excitement about this. So I go back there. He's like, yeah, we both want to know. And they're doing the ultrasound and they're looking around. And I just remember like seeing the nurse's face, calling her a nurse. Yeah, whatever job she was, who cares, right? But seeing her face, and she started to get more serious, and I still just didn't get it. So she says, I'm sorry, honey, I just can't find a heartbeat. And in my head, I'm still thinking, well, what does that mean? It didn't click that you have to have a heartbeat to actually be alive. Yeah. In my head, I thought, oh, well, what do we do next? What does that mean? What's going on?
Right.
I still wasn't clicked. And she's looking at me because she can tell I don't get it. And she's like, I'm sorry, honey, there is no heartbeat. And it wasn't until her eyes teared up, she couldn't hold her emotions back. She started to cry, which was so sweet and sincere. She started to cry. And then I was like, oh, that's all I could say was, oh, I'm getting it. I was like, my baby is dead. You're saying the baby's not alive. And she said, yes, and couldn't talk, was just choked up. And that is when I teared up. And, I think my actual OB came in at that time, was holding my hand. They all just had compassionate eyes and they were so sweet. I got to see the process for women who go with this, because you're in that waiting room and everybody has their belly and their smiles, and you're to go back through there was mortifying for sure. We talked a lot. We made plans of like, what do I want to do next? They gave me what my options were. The other piece that was so crazy was I'm 26 weeks in my brain. And when they were looking, they couldn't tell exactly everything at that moment, but they're like, the water is very murky. It's hard to even see it. Like, see through this, your fluids inside around the baby. Mm-hmm. They're like, we think this baby's actually been gone for several weeks. What have you been feeling? And so then I'm crazy, because I'm thinking, I thought I felt the baby moving this morning. And
right.
But it's your first pregnancy. So like, you don't have any.
Any gauge.
Yeah. Cause like, but you're pregnant now.
It is true. It's a few times. Maybe it's my third time telling this story while I'm pregnant, right? So craziest feeling. But yeah, you start to feel, I'm 21 weeks right now. How crazy, right? You start to feel movement between 18 and 21 weeks. And so I had felt, some things. And just the interesting part is that, like, when you move and things like that, maybe the fluids are moving around. I can't tell you what I was feeling, but I swore I was feeling movement.
You know, they say that if you have had a pregnancy and a birth, that you can feel phantom movement in your uterus for up to like 20 years after you give birth.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I would believe that. Cause like, again, that was my first, but I think that's what I was feeling. So I had no idea. That's the whole point I want to make clear, is I had no cramping. I had no bleeding. I had zero signs. I went in for just a routine check and didn't think anything was wrong, to the point that I was just smiling through. Wow. Yay. I get to have an ultrasound. Like, so it was super stark, shocking. My husband was shocked. They didn't want me to drive home alone. I know some people.
So did you call Ahi from the room?
Yes, my husband's name is Ahi, and I did. I called him. I called him right away, and we were just so silent. And I was like, so. And I remember, I'll never forget. I remember saying, "I'm sorry" to him. Somehow I felt it was my fault. I was like, I'm sorry. You guys, this is so crazy. But I was really into KFC. I ate so much KFC during that pregnancy. And I literally, I'm so glad I said it in front of them, but I was crying. I was like, I did this. I ate too much KFC. Like, I thought I just damaged my body.
That it was, something. Yes.
It was my, and then I remember my OB, I'll never forget it, but she looked at me straight. She's like, Cammy, listen to me. You're going to struggle with this. You're going to have lots of thoughts of what you did wrong, how you caused this, how you messed up. Were you healthy enough? Did you get enough sleep? She's like, I want you to know that people who eat terribly have beautiful, healthy babies. People who are starving and don't have food and they have distended bellies have beautiful, healthy babies. She's like, it has nothing to do with that. So don't take that. And I remember her, and I'm sure I said it 10 more times, but it was something I'll never forget, because that is what we do. We struggle with guilt and mm-hmm. what we do wrong. And
we like to shame ourselves.
It just feels like I'm the one carrying. And I remember saying, I'm sorry, baby. I'm sorry. That's what I kept saying to my husband. And he wanted to come get me. I didn't live far from where my OB was, but I remember telling him, so your logical, it's such shock. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense, because if you come, then you'll have to, we'll have to leave a car here, and then we'll have to come back and get the car. He's like, baby, who cares? Somebody can go get our car. It doesn't matter. I was like, no, that doesn't make sense. You stay home. I was in total shock. I was teary, but I still was didn't have like the full breakdown. I was just numb, and they were very worried about me, but I was convinced I could drive home, and I did. I drove home. And before I left, though, we had decided that I would, they told me, because it was Christmas time, you guys. It was Christmas time. It was the last thing I did with that baby was I led the choir, and we had our Christmas concert, and there are still songs that we sang that I can't hear to this day that just trigger me right back to that moment. So in front of very publicly, I'm like, you know, 6 months pregnant in front of everybody and directing, and then I'm thinking, how am I going to face anybody and all of that? It was just so public. And so what ended up happening, I'm taking a little long with these details.
You're fine.
Push through a little faster. But what ended up happening is they let me know that my options, I'll just share those with you because all of this is part of it, right? So they said, you know, the baby does have to come out. Because like, I couldn't even fathom. I forgot. I was like, oh, yeah, I have to get this baby out somehow. This baby's not living. It's inside of me. And they let me know, like, you know, anytime. They said, hey, it's the holidays. you can wait since you're having no pain. No bleeding, no anything. You can wait till after the holidays if that will be easier for you. And all I was thinking, I actually have a very close friend who did that, who went and celebrated her holidays and had everybody in the family feel happy that everything was fine. And then after, she told them that she had lost the baby and she had the procedure done after. So you really can. But all I kept thinking is, I can't, because in my head, I will think the baby's moving or something. I'll have hope that God is going to miraculously heal my baby. Yeah. Like, it is too much for me. I can't fake it. Like,
it's just dragging out the pain. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too much. So I was like, we have to do this. So we schedule it for the very next morning. And I thought they were just going to cut me open and take this baby out. Like, I don't know. I did not know I'd have to deliver and go through labor until they told, like, I remember even that I remember writing an article. There's somebody years ago, this happened, by the way, I am 40 now. This happened, I believe when I was 32. So it's about 8 years now. And I'll never forget. There was an article. I think I'm saying the math all wrong because I feel like it's 10 years.
I was going to say you have to be doing the math wrong because this was before Solana, and yeah. Solana will be 8 in December.
Yeah, I'm totally doing the math wrong. It's been about 10 years. Okay.
And I mean, I wasn't going to correct
her. Who knows her age and stuff? She was not going to correct it. You should. She was my child. It's been about 10 years. Yeah. So
it's because Solana and John were born in the same month.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I was like, oh, yeah, it was 5 minutes ago. No, anyways, but it's been several years now is the point. And I actually don't know what the point of that point was, but, you know, real life. hashtag real life. Okay, let me get my train of thought back. So I had options. I was considered, you know, I'm young and I can do. So they basically were saying, honey, we can cut this baby out if you would like us to, but that can give you the chance of infection. It can make future pregnancies more difficult for you. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have complications on the road and you're young. We really suggest that we induce you and that you have this baby. And I remember looking at them like, you're crazy. Like, I just thought, that's when I kind of lost it a little bit, started shaking and like, I can't do that. Like, that would be the hardest thing I've ever done. I have to have labor and go through all of it and have a baby that's dead. Like, it was so hard for my brain to wrap around. So I kept telling them, just cut me. I remember crying, just cut me open. Just cut me open. Just take the baby out. Take it out. And I remember them just saying, you're going to regret that. And I'm so glad I trusted them. Because I finally was like, okay, they know best. I said, I'll go home and I'll think about it. I got home and I remember I was home for about an hour and I called the doctor back and said, let's schedule it because I still felt like I felt the baby moving again. This is too crazy for my brain. And so anyway, so we went ahead and scheduled it for the next morning at like 7 something. And I got home that night. My husband and I processed totally differently. I had two really best friends that I called and they came over and they were just like at my feet and we were all just crying. And my husband was like in the room, just quietly crying. So like, it was very weird. You know, we hugged each other, we were there, but then he didn't want to be around people and I did. So our compromise was he stays in the room, not be around people, and I need my girls.
Right.
And they're around me, and our pastor came and his wife, and they prayed for us. And I'll never forget the prayer my friend prayed, because she's like, God, we heard, we were told, I was very prepared. Like, this is your first labor. It's your first birth, so it's going to take a while. Be prepared to stay overnight in the hospital. We're going to induce you, but it still can take hours, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Some people have had 24-hour birth labors and all that stuff. And so that all felt like torture as well. So I was telling my friend, like, this is all so hard for me to do. And she just said, let's pray. Let's pray that God will give us a miracle and that this will all happen so fast for you. So I said, okay, let's pray. So my pastor, all of us start praying that the miraculous would happen and I would have this baby. And you guys, I did have a miracle happen.
Yeah.
I did have a miracle happen the next day. So everybody I've told is like, that's not even people who I know who've had to have the deliver a stillbirth or a baby that they knew was gone. I know I got a miracle. So what happened is the next day I go in the morning, check in or whatever, they get me in the room and they gave me a pill to induce me. I think just a few hours later she came in and they placed another pill, so many details, but anyways, they placed another pill in your cervix and it was within an hour after she had done that they started laboring.
Wow.
I was in the hospital. All of this happened. I think we started inducing me at 10 and the baby came at like one or
wow.
two.
Oh,
see what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was a complete, and she even said, this is crazy. And I knew that was grace because that was a miracle. So that is what happened for me. The baby came so fast. And in fact, none of them were prepared or expecting it. This is also sad that when the baby actually came, I did get the epidural. I wasn't trying to be a champ. I was like,
right.
All of this is a lot. Just give me whatever you have to do to help me make it through this. I didn't cry. I was very happy and pleasant. Happy is not the word. I was pleasant to everybody because mm-hmm. It's nobody's fault. Like everybody's trying to help me and I didn't want to snap. So I was trying so hard to just make it through. And I told my husband, I was like, you're with the epidural. You can't always feel everything perfectly. But mm-hmm. I was like, I really feel like something in between my legs. Like I think something's happening. And he says, okay, I'm going to go get help. And he runs it out of the room. And then the baby came and like plopped onto the bed and nobody was there.
Oh,
so that was also very hard.
Yeah.
Because nobody was there to catch the baby. And I still didn't know if it was a boy or girl at that point. And so the doctor comes in, my husband came in first. His eyes are so wide. I think what he told me later is like, there was just so much blood. Like, he wasn't accustomed to what to see or to expect.
He wasn't expecting.
So I remember his eyes being like really big and he's like, okay, maybe they're coming. You're going to be fine. I was like, what are you seeing? And he's like, they'll be here soon.
He didn't want to panic you further.
He was freaked out. Yeah. Like, I don't know if all this blood is normal. Is my wife dying? Like, he was so scared.
Right.
It was crazy.
It's such uncharted territory for them during a normal birth. Yeah. I couldn't imagine something that's like,
oh, traumatic.
Oh my gosh.
Traumatic for sure. And for him to see everything and he could see the baby was, you know, there as well. It was crazy. And I couldn't see anything. My legs were up and I was just, you know, pushing or whatever by myself. But maybe it was so, the baby was so early that it kind of slipped out. It didn't really have like a mm-hmm. pushing period or it was mm-hmm. just so fast. That's again why we knew the baby had passed sooner than we thought. The baby was smaller than they would have expected at 26 weeks. And the doctors came in, everybody was just like, I'm so sorry. We tried to get here as fast as we could. Wow, that happened fast. It really was a miracle that it happened that fast. So I always thought my friend's prayer. I always thank God for that. I actually even left the hospital that evening. I didn't even stay overnight. Mm-hmm. It was all about 11 o'clock that night I left. So anyways, that's kind of like the main, I just want to tell you, I guess, about finding out. I think when I broke, remember I said I was pretty together or something and just mm-hmm. composed maybe somewhat.
I know my heart hurts for you when you say that because I'm just like, of course you're like in the hospital. This is so Cammy in the hospital. Like you got a smile on your face. You're trying to be polite to the nurses as you're like dealing with this horrendous thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh and they gosh. Were so kind to me. And I remember their faces when nurses, Becky, I'll never forget you, Becky. They were so good.
Becky with the good hair.
Becky with what?
With the good hair.
That's awesome. So when they came and then they told me it's a girl, I broke. That's when I like the dams broke open mm-hmm. because I always wanted a boy. I have four brothers and I was like, oh my gosh, girls are drama. They're catty. They're mean. I don't want a girl. And
same.
I just wanted a boy. But somewhere in my heart, I started to really open up to entertaining a girl and I started to see the little bows and dresses. And I think I started to actually want one. And so when it was a girl, I was like, I think I wanted a girl. Like, you know, it just broke. It wasn't a bad breaking. It was like a, oh my word, I think I actually wanted a girl. And I was and I would have been the first, like, that would have been the first granddaughter in the family. Like, it just was like mm-hmm. special if that was going to happen. So that was when I got very, very emotional. And I'll just remember feeling so proud of her. Like, they wrapped her up and she was so tiny. And I remember like, do you want to hold her? Do you want to see my baby? Anybody who came in and they just would cry because like, yeah, we want to hold your baby, but like, this is heartbreaking. They're devastated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was very emotional. Like, I kept her as long as I wanted and just took some pictures and then they would put her in the morgue. And if a friend would visit, if they wanted to hold the baby or see, they would bring the baby back up from the morgue and let me hold, like, it was this back and forth thing. Because as many times I wanted, like, they were so accommodating. As many times I wanted to hold her or to see her, they would just bring her back up, wrap her in that blanket. She was cold, and like, that was insanity. That was when I couldn't believe that this had happened. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe all of it was so fast. You see what I'm saying? It was in the matter of like 24 hours.
Yeah.
I went from this appointment to like, I'm in the hospital delivering. It was so fast. I have all sorts of things I could share about the experience, but I'll pause there to see what you guys are.
Wow. So I have a question. Like, so you had to go through birth, you had to get an epidural and all that sort of stuff.
We even had to bury her, you guys. Like, I didn't know how this worked. I'm like, you people in a ball. Like, I'm so ignorant, but it's life. And yeah. It's quite a funeral. I mean, it was all, if we wanted a funeral, but we had to do all these things that were just,
I feel like you had, like, if you, okay, so my question is, I'm assuming you were like producing milk and that sort of stuff. Yeah. So like going through that sort of like, your body grieving the loss. Yeah. Like, how did you handle that? Because you still had afterbirth, I'm assuming. Yeah. You still were like,
you guys, you know, that, all of that, it's awkward because, so I'm a woman of faith. I come from a strong faith background, and there was so much confusion as to how could God allow this? And also how could I have to go through all? I just kept thinking, I'm the strongest woman on the planet. Like, I just, all these things, I had to deliver this baby. And now I remember praying, because I got that miracle, praying that my breast milk wouldn't come in. And the nurses and everybody, because it was my first baby, I don't understand how the body worked. Yeah. They're like, honey, it's going to come in. We're so sorry. That's just the way your body is made. And I was like, maybe not, you know, like, maybe it won't. So that was hard for me, because it was another thing I had to go through. Absolutely. Yeah. When my milk came in and then trying to dry up. It all just felt cruel or something. I struggled with feeling like this is all cruel. I had to deliver this baby. And then I couldn't plan. How do I plan a funeral? So the hospitals are so accommodating for this. There's this, St. John's Mercy Hospital in St. Louis I delivered in. And they had this thing called, shout out to you guys. They had this thing called Mercy Heart Prints, I think. And they came in where they like took a picture of the baby. They left me like the measurement tool that they used to measure how long she was. And we named her name is Shania. That's what we called her. And that means gift of God. All of that, like a certificate. And then they also offered for someone to actually work with me to plan her burial and everything. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. That was the biggest gift anyone could give me, because I couldn't think of how to do any of that. I was just like numb. And
I was going to say, in so much shock.
Because I still had a little secret hope that she'd be born alive. Like, because I knew babies that age could be viable, and a lot of complications. It would have been a difficult road for sure. Mm-hmm. But, again, they think she was earlier. So, my body feeling stuff. The thing is, because I had the epidural, I didn't really feel much of anything in terms of pain wise, that felt like grace for sure. And I was able, to kind of walk out, like I said, at 11 PM that night. And, that was probably the hardest, like there were so many parts that were the hardest part. Another part was like walking, leaving with arms empty. With empty arms, you don't expect that. That's not, you come in with you're on the floor, you can hear babies crying, and you don't have that sound, that cry. Like, there again, just pieces and pieces that I think what was happening is I was building up in my mind, like, this is so cruel. But what was I wasn't speaking. I told you when I broke, and then, but mostly I was acting composed. And so people kept asking if I was okay. And it was like, I had so much that was starting to boil inside of me that I start to think I'm pretty toxic, and anything I say is not going to come out the way that I want. I don't know if I just didn't give myself permission at that moment, but which can happen to Christians. We're so full of faith. We just feel like we can't show our doubting side or whatever.
Can't be negative.
I don't know what was going on. I don't know if it was that, or I literally was just in that much shock. It could have been a culmination.
Like you said, it was like 24 hours.
It was so fast. Like, true. It was
that's
so
a
fast.
Lot between like, oh, I get to like, I'm just going to your routine appointment to like, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was so fast. So I don't even know if I had formed my thoughts yet, but I could feel roiling. And my husband on our drive home. When we saw her for the last time, and she was just so tiny. And it's so funny because this is actually let's add a little comic relief in the sad story. To this day, when we talk about Shania, our first baby, all we can say is, man, she was so sweet. Yeah, she was so sweet. And she was so small. Wasn't she so small? And that is all we can say about our baby. We literally, if you ask us to this day, like, we still laugh at ourselves because we'll say it in different ways. Man, that baby was so sweet. Wasn't she? She was the sweetest, wasn't she? Man, wasn't she so tiny? She was so sweet and she was so small. Those are adjectives and it's hilarious. Like, that's all. We adore that baby, but she's just sweet, small, and just innocent. You know? So that's our Shania memorial. So we didn't do a funeral. We just we did a graveside situation where mm-hmm. we buried her. That was another. Each day, each step is just brilliantly hard. Each step you're thinking, goodness gracious, there's more strength in me than I can ever imagine. Looking back now, I know that was God's strength. Mm-hmm. That was the resilience of the Lord, because I didn't have it inside of me. But because I was mush, I was a mess. So I'm roiling, I'm building. I leave the hospital, I'm heading back home in the car with my husband. They wheelchair me out and my arms are empty. And I keep thinking, this is so unnatural. Like, my baby's supposed to be in my arms right now. And this is weird. And the baby's gone and she's in the morgue. And it was winter. She's going to be in the cold in the ground. Your mind's thinking all these things. Mm-hmm. And I hate this. I'm so upset. And I'm in the car and I remember looking out the window. My husband's driving and he's holding on to me. And he just kept saying, like, baby, can you just talk to me? Because I wasn't saying anything. Can you just talk to me? I know this is so hard, but can you let me in? Can you talk to me? And I wouldn't. I said nothing. I just looked at this 30-minute drive. I just looked out that window and tears are streaming down my face, but I didn't trust myself to speak. So we get into our home and I go to our bedroom and I saw the body pillow where I always slept and made me think of the baby immediately. And I was like, that pillow has to go. He's like, okay. And I went into the guest room and I fell onto the floor. And I just let out this like wail. I was at the foot of my bed, just weeping and weeping. And I finally started speaking. And you want to know what came out of my mouth? And it was very real. And I remember thinking, I mean every word of this, but I just kept saying, he hates me. He hates me. He has to hate me. He must hate me. God hates me. Oh, I've displeased him. He hates me. He hates me. He hates me. And I meant it. I just kept saying, he hates me. And my husband was there, and that's what I spoke when I spoke. And he's just rubbing my back. And context to that is I had just lost my mom the year before, and she was everything. And I just thought, how could you let my mom go? And then how could my first baby? It just felt so cruel. And I was like, oh, I've displeased him. He hates me. God hates me. That's what caused this. And my husband, he lays his hand on my back. And I'll never forget his words. He's such a wise man. And he leans real close and he's like, baby, he's like, the Lord is very close to you right now and he hears you and he loves you. They said, but the enemy is just as close. So be careful who you're listening to. I mean, to this day, isn't that were you powerful?
Like, I feel like in that moment, though, I'd be like, I need you and your wisdom to get out of this room right now.
Yeah, I absolutely think I just want you to
let me be a mess.
Yeah, I think I definitely said go away or something. I didn't even let him know in that moment how profoundly impacting those words were and how forever I will remember them.
It's like what you needed to hear, but not what you wanted to hear.
Right.
It's like, I want you to wallow with me.
Yes.
My baby's still not in my arms.
Yeah. So what it did is it snatched something out of my spirit that I feel would have built and festered. Who knows what I would have done believing that God hates me,
right?
You know, that whole curse God and die concept thing. Mm-hmm. Like that's where I was going for sure. So it got in my head. He absolutely got in my head and my heart, but I did. I probably said something cruel, like get out or go away or something. I don't know. I almost ended up in the hospital that night because I'd cried so much. And then they let him know I was dehydrated. I started to really struggle physically that night. I mean, it was just a lot for sure. But yeah, that I just wanted to share that because I'll never forget those words. And I wanted to share it for someone else that is struggling with your thoughts and with your beliefs and with your feelings about what God must be thinking and must feel towards you, especially if you're going through compound grief or thing after thing is piling up and you're feeling just this is cruel and life is cruel, is to certainly be careful who you're listening to, because man, to talk about being vulnerable,
right?
Talk about being feeling like I'm at rock bottom, right? Yeah.
Wow. I would say grief definitely leaves you open, and you want to hear.
Yeah.
So.
And your thoughts can get so convoluted. And again, funny enough, I said I knew I was toxic.
Right.
That's something I remember thinking is I have nothing to say. I just would say, do you want to see her? Do you want to hold her? loved her from the moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Loved her. She was so sweet and small, you guys. She really was.
So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. So welcome back. I really needed that break. So I wanted to get into a little bit more of the particulars about your experience and kind of like what you went through. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is, how do you feel like you have a great story of how you were treated by like medical team around you and whatever, but how do you feel like the medical terms surrounding your experience like helped or hindered it, or like either from the medical staff or from people you knew? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I started out kind of saying it was called a miscarriage, but I wouldn't have called it a miscarriage. So I think that people interchange terms, and it is really difficult depending on your experience. So in my mind, I always have to differentiate the fact that, no, I actually didn't miscarry. There's no elevation in this. There's no one's better than the other. One's worse than the other. I think a loss is a loss. Mm-hmm. And I think it hurts no matter what. But it's interesting how you do feel like, well, this is my specific, your loss is so unique and you don't really like to be lumped. So yeah. Unless that is your experience, so I think sometimes with terminology, people need to actually ask someone what they would call it, or what happened to you, what would you call that? Or I've heard it called this, is that what you call it? Just to clarify, because for some reason it does matter to the person that you understand what they went through, and it feels a bit more connecting, I guess, or like you're getting their story. So for me, I wasn't called a miscarriage because my body did not propel this baby out or do anything to start mm-hmm. letting go of this baby. My body was just, they remember them saying to me, you're such a good mama. Your body's just nurturing this baby. And was that a blessing or not? I don't know. I felt like a freak after. I felt like, what was wrong with me? How come I had no idea? And I'm like a bad mom. I had no idea anything was wrong with my child. So it was interesting how they were telling me I was doing something awesome. And it didn't feel that way. So sometimes I think the parts that we celebrate too is maybe sensitive to as well. Like, oh, that was good. It was like this. And it may not feel that way to the person, but mine was called a fetal death, which makes sense because the baby died inside of me and didn't actually come out. I've heard also stillbirth used, and I didn't identify with that until I realized I looked it up, and stillbirth and fetal birth, they say fetal death is a type of stillbirth. And so there is, I think I was talking to Melissa earlier, and she was saying that some people even call it an abortion at certain stages, or, mm-hmm. Which would be super offensive and super hurtful. So I think when it comes to the people around me, their mistakes were out of, when I say mistakes, that's not even the right word, but their terminology was out of ignorance.
Yeah.
I do think that when I go to another doctor or had another child, I didn't always appreciate the way they talked or mm-hmm. the way they referenced things. They're just so sterile.
Yeah.
I'll never forget like feeling like they didn't really feel my pain or care sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that's just like, so like I've never had a loss. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's hard for me to process or to like almost maneuver the conversation, because it's just like, I know I'm gonna say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't even know how, cause like, I don't even, Michelle and I, when we were talking about like what to call like some of these episodes, it was like, I was like, well, let's just call it this. And she would, she would almost correct me like, no, I wanna call it this. And it's like, even those like subtle things where it's like, it wasn't my experience. So it's hard for me to it's hard for somebody who hasn't experienced it to even know how to be empathetic, mm-hmm. I feel like. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's kind of surprising to me that like some of the medical like experiences that I've heard that like you women have had are just like, it's like, these are from OBGYNs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you would think,
and
like,
it's just,
this is standard fare.
Yeah. I just think it's that callousness. Sometimes some are so empathetic. Hence the person who teared up with me, I'll never forget her. Because her empathy, one, helped me to understand what was actually happening to me. And two, it just made me feel quite loved. Like they even walked, I forgot to mention this, they even walked me out of like a back room. So I didn't have to go through the hallway. that was, they had that prepared. How smart was that? So yeah, I never had to go through and see everybody there, and they got walked me right to my car, and they even called and checked on me the next day. Like, it was, so I had a beautiful, I didn't like the front staff there actually, but
who likes the front staff?
Side note.
They were a little bit rude. I mean, you just run into people who, this is their job, this is what they do. I would even say, hey, I'm calling, I'm the one who had this. And they'd be like, okay, so what do you need? And I'm like, just say, I'm sorry. Or, hey, that was hard. Have some empathy. So I did find that in the medical field, there were some people who just weren't as nurturing, kind, or their bedside manner was lacking.
Exactly. I was going to say they were too professional.
Yeah.
They overboarded the professional side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, I want to segue to something that you just said, Melissa, if I'm allowed to segue. Here's the thing. You talked about supporters and people not knowing what to say. And that's a can of worms, because anybody who's been through, and it's not just with infant loss, I think you all called it beautifully, like for some people, they do deal with infertility. But when it comes to actually having had a viable child and something happening, you know, it feels like a loss, and a loss, a loss. So I think, you know, clarify that. I think that term is super appropriate, and we can relate, resonates with all of us. But the supporters and the things, I don't know, and Michelle, it seems as though you've had this experience as well, and you may have already heard and picked up on this, but people will say some of the hardest things, and what you just said helps me, though, because that's what I believe in the whole heart. I believe they're sincere. I believe they're well-intended.
We have to give them grace.
They deserve it. They're so well-intended. They just don't even know what to say. Some might make a joke because they want to make you laugh. Some might make, you know what I'm saying? Some of the things I do get asked, like what was said or what was hard. Some of the things that were hard is, I had one lady who, you know, she was like this black mama in our church, and just a woman who just had been through some stuff that has nothing to do with her race, but that's what I remember as black mama. And she comes up to me after, and she's like, huh? I heard, like, just kind of, hey, I heard you, just rough, you know? Hey, heard you lost the baby. And at least she's acknowledging it or something. Some people don't, because they don't know what to say. So give her that. And I said, yeah, and you know, I'm serious about it or somber. And she's like, well, don't worry about it, girl. You have another one. And I remember like thinking, it was so bothersome to me. And I was so upset, because I thought, like, how are you just going to like brush past my experience and just don't worry, you'll have another one. That should sound encouraging, right? It's encouraging. But it didn't feel encouraging, because I was still so in the midst of my grief. And so
I don't want to talk about another one. I want to talk about the one I should have right now. Yes.
Perfectly said. And so my husband after helps me, and he said, baby, he said, she's had a very hard life, and I think she's had many losses. So to her, she really was trying to comfort you. I remember, like, that's what started to help me. My mind started to shift and see, some of these people who are trying to comfort you actually have been through what you've been through, but they still don't know what to say. It seems though sometimes when you've been through it, you get a bit more sensitive with your words, but not always. I can brush it off because, hey, now I've had 5 kids after, and it's going to work for you too. Don't worry. You're going to have 20
There's
kids.
A light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah.
Trying to encourage you. So yeah, I could go on and on about things people say, but I also just want to acknowledge that that is the way I look at it now, is people are well-intended. And I usually just say thank you no matter what. I might laugh later or cry later, but I'll just say thank you so much, because that's what they meant to do, was to be encouraging. Things that also, just for people to know, for when you're trying to help supporters, things that aren't helpful is like saying something like, well, they're in heaven, they're in a better place. Doesn't feel comforting when you're just grieving and you're dying, because what you're thinking is, well, I want them in heaven. I want them here.
I've said this numerous times to people that when they'll say, well, I talked to this person and this is what I said to them. I'm like, that's not helpful.
It just doesn't. Just keep in mind that someone's so raw in their pain, and even if it's true, and we actually believe that, especially as Christ followers, that person may very well. Again, and now I went from people to babies. I'm sorry, from babies to people, but just I'm thinking of grieving period. But especially with our sweet babies, they feel so innocent. I think most of us do believe that they are in heaven. I call my baby an angel baby. Our first baby's an angel baby. You just do believe that, so that is true. But you just want them with you. The other thing that I think is, Michelle, chime in too, if you can think of any of the ones that you heard. I think that's kind of unhelpful, is like, it isn't just like you're going to, I think it's, don't worry, you're going to see them one day. You're going to see them again one day. That you just want to die. Like, I remember thinking, this is a Grey's Anatomy line, but I was like, I'm being held together by like glue and tape. Mm-hmm. Like that is what's holding me together right now. And my baby, it's winter. I was in that freezing cold ground, frozen. And I wanted nothing more than to be in that ground with my baby. Like mm-hmm. I did not want to be here. And that was hard. I can't say that I went to the suicidal thoughts where I was trying to figure out a way to not live. But I remember thinking, I actually don't enjoy anything right now about my
right.
life. Like I don't want to be here at all. So you tell me I'll see you again one day really makes me think, well, how can I die sooner?
Right.
How can I join her sooner? So that's why I tell people as well, like, that's not, I wouldn't say that's comforting to say to someone. So what is comforting? I'll just kind of add that part, 'cause I know that is helpful to mm-hmm. yeah. provide that as well. I think what is comforting is, one is learning that you're the power of listening. It really is a power. If you were to listen, I told you everything and you, man, I'm so sorry that happened. I know we get tired of hearing sorry, but not really upset by it. It's mm-hmm. just like, yes, I've heard I'm sorry a lot, but that never upsets me. You are mm-hmm. sorry. You yeah. are sorry. And that's sincere. So that means something, or hey, I want you to know I'm praying for you. I want you to know I'm thinking about you. That means something as well. It doesn't bother me at all that someone would say that to me. So just know that just listening, less is more. You don't have to know. Even when people say, I don't know what to say, that meant a lot to me because I was so genuine and authentic.
Right.
I don't know what to say. Oh, and yeah, I wouldn't know what to say either. That's what I probably would say is I would, and that's fair. So just, I think being super genuine, mm-hmm. the fact that we are at a loss of words.
I would to piggyback off that, even say that as Christians, I think sometimes we try to over make it a spiritual comfort. Like yeah. we try to like go overboard with a spiritual connection yeah. to it, and it doesn't have yeah. to be just the I'm sorry this sucks for you
yeah.
is fine for me.
Yeah, this really sucks and I hate that you're going through it.
Yep.
And some people, I remember I was pregnant with a girl at the same time and she went on to have her baby, and it killed her to even bring her baby to church knowing that I didn't have my baby. And it does, people really feel your pain.
Mm-hmm.
People really empathize with you. And I remember her coming up to me, teary, and she's like, I somehow have just been praying that I could share her with you, her daughter. Daughter. I just want to share her, okay? Anytime you want to hold her or whatever, just, and it touched me. I'll never forget that because she didn't know what to say. She's like, can we share? Can I share my baby with you? And it was deeply, deeply impacted me and affected me. So just as genuine as you can be, I think is, you don't have to have, there aren't right words. Like there isn't a right or wrong mm-hmm. with this. It's all a unique experience. So.
So as an outlier, this is how I've handled it when somebody I loved like had a miscarriage. I just like, or a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody, I've never
had somebody had.
Yeah. I've never had like, I don't know. I'm not a very emotionally strong person. I don't handle emotion well. So what I do is like, I usually just like, I don't even ask. I'll just like ask their home, and then I usually bring them Starbucks and food, and then I'll just sit there.
Perfect.
Because it's just like, I don't have the words. Like there are no words. I feel like sometimes it's like, I'm here to listen if you want to talk, but there's nothing I can possibly say to placate you mm-hmm. in that moment. 'Cause it's like, I don't know how you're feeling.
That one is another one. I know how you feel. Ugh. People hate.
No, you don't.
You feel very unique. You're like, no, you really don't.
Right.
So every experience is different.
It's unique. Grief is unique. Is unique. Is unique. So perfect. Yes, I don't know how you feel. I love that. Very practical. Cards, text messages. None of that. It's bad. It's just helpful. And I just think acknowledging them though. I remember mm-hmm. just feeling like, just acknowledging, like even a squeeze or a face or something shows that you're acknowledging someone's pain. It's true that some people are very uncomfortable with emotion and they're uncomfortable with vulnerability and they don't even know like what to say. So sometimes I think people feel ignored who mm-hmm. are going through because they're like, everybody's moving on with their life. And I just feel like no one sees me over here.
I'm not sure how the episodes will play out, but I actually discussed that in the episodes that we talk about miscarriages, that when I came home, I had family members and friends wanting to come to the house so that they could comfort me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think you realize I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, even my husband wanted to sit and like, he wanted to sleep. He wanted to cuddle and sleep. And I'm like, no, I'm going to organize the whole house. Thanks.
Right now, actually. Get my house in order.
But then when I did go back to work, like there was a whole lot, there was a big hot mess situation with how I had to go back to work. But like I said, I struggled because people knew that I had had this miscarriage, but no one would say anything to me. And then it was like 2 days later, I was in a group of peers discussing a work matter. And one of the guys, actually a guy in technology in our tech department, walks up to me, just put his arm, one arm around me, kind of squeezed me and said, "I heard, I'm sorry." And then he turned around and walked away.
Goosebumps.
Yeah. And so that to me, it meant so much more than people, because I think.
Hearing situation.
Right. I think people feel that they've got to like hear all the details. No, I don't want to talk about my whole story. It was 3 days ago. I'd rather not live through that again. I agree. Just someone there to be just that comforting arm. I'm sorry.
Or there's those people who are like well-intending but stupid, who are just like, "Well, you know, at least it was early, so you weren't as connected to the baby."
It was early.
Like, yeah. Like things like that. Like, at least it was early, and it's like,
that's perfectly set for things that are not helpful.
and this is one that I heard a lot was, "Well, there was maybe something wrong with the baby, so God gave you grace by taking the baby."
And as a mom, you're like, "I would do anything." That's the thing that people have to understand. Like, you just want that baby. Like I said, I would have had so many challenges.
Right.
I've heard of.
And you don't care.
And you don't even care.
It's,
you just still want that life. So it is, again, tons of things like that. Well, my dad actually, I love him. He's Caribbean. He actually said something that was so hurtful. He knows I love him and I share stories about my family all the time. But I remember him saying, "Cammy, I heard that when the baby's legs are crossed, they're gonna die." That's what he said to me.
I feel like that would be in your head for every ultrasound from then on.
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually, guys, like, since I'm 21 weeks, I had the 20-week anatomy scan like days ago, and that's the thing. It was like, those legs better not be crossed. Again, there's superstitions. There's things that people believe, but oh my word. So yeah, like he's Caribbean, and that's his culture, and he wasn't thinking anything of it. He was just like, "Oh, baby, the legs were crossed. Baby was going to die the whole time. Poor baby." That's what he's thinking. And I'm like, that just did nothing.
That's
for
not
me,
helping
Dad.
Me.
That
yeah.
Did not. And I don't know what I said. I think I might have said, "Dad, that's pretty insensitive to say right now." I think I said something because it's your family. You say more. But yeah. But and he meant really, but I didn't say a lot because I knew he meant well. But anyways.
But no, to go back, I completely agree with you. And that was the most meaningful out of all of them.
To me, I got very like warm fuzzy inside thinking.
Just for like a mid-20 male just to come up and be like,
"I heard."
Yeah.
You acknowledge, because that's the thing, is you don't have to know what to say or say a lot, but it does help. And the ones that you said it go in a little too deep or do, I think just close friends, when you're around and you're just there, I might just start talking. If I feel like sharing, I'll share. And you've given me the opportunity and the safe space to do so. Again, if your family or closer, yes, people respond that way. We just want to be there and whatever. Like you said, that's exactly what happened. But for some who aren't close, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. What happened?" You're thinking, "I don't want to tell you my story.
Like, right.
I don't want to share all this with you right now." And again, it's the wrong environment. Sometimes I'm at work. I can't get into it. But again, I still felt good that you acknowledged me. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, and there are times that like, so Holly, who was on our panel, like her and I are like, we're in the same circles, but like, we're not besties. Like, we don't text all the time. So like, she experienced the loss and like, I knew about it, but like, she never told me. So like, I just never acknowledged it when she was around. Cause I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's hard too, because it's like, at what point do you almost feel like betrayed that somebody like shared your loss with like random people? You know what I mean? And I think that's so hard, just making about me, guys.
No, like, but it's
this
hard.
Is really hard for me to deal with.
I know it is. It really is hard for supporters. Like, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to have gone through it, but it's so sticky and awkward. And did I do the wrong thing? And I've been through stuff, and I can still text or say to someone and second guess and be like, "Ooh, I hope I didn't say the wrong. I hope I didn't hurt," you know, and I've been through it. So your feelings are justifiable. With that, like you said, if somebody didn't tell you personally, I think that we, just so you know, future going forward, I think we do have an expectation that it's going to get out. Like, I didn't have to tell everybody, but it's going to get out. Yeah. It depends on, I guess, how early and how secretive the pregnancy was. Yes, yeah. There's that to consider. But if in any way you knew someone was pregnant and then suddenly they're not, then they expect that people found out even if they didn't tell them. So now you know. Yeah. I think I'm never going to forget what your phrase that man did, Michelle, because I'm thinking that's perfect. Somebody didn't tell me and I could just say, hey, I heard and I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I'm going to use. Keep it to me, because I'm like, that's perfect. It's short and it's meaningful, because we hear each other's stories and pain. Mm-hmm. I got messages from all sorts of people when I finally put it on Facebook, because I thought they all saw me announce it. I put it out there and I finally, even navigating that, the social media aspect, right? How do I tell people now that this is not the case, and how do I write this post? And that was actually one of the greatest source of comfort for me. You don't want to go on media. You don't want to see their happy people and their happy posts and their happy life. You don't even want to see any of it. But I remember thinking, okay, I've got to like tell people and address this now at some point when I felt ready to do that. My husband and I talked about how to do it. And I had pictures of I've never shown pictures of my baby to like anybody. Mm-hmm. This will be this December will be the 10th from my brain. Yep. The 10th year. And so funny, I was saying eight, and I knew that all along. So I had something in my brain cooking up. This is the 10th year. And I thought, I think I'm going to finally share her picture. And it's not because it had to be the 10th year. I just really, really, because she was not fully developed, if I felt very like private about it. And I realized that people find beauty in all sorts of things. So whether or not they feel beauty, I was never ashamed of her.
Yeah.
And that's what's going through my head, is considering finally sharing her sweet little, heard it every time, her sweet little self. So I don't know what that had to do with anything. I probably killed a rabbit and chased it.
No.
So how did your significant other handle the loss, and how did it impact your relationship?
Okay. My husband and I are super open, because we just work with people and help people, and we want to be helpful. So I'm going to be very real about that and very transparent about it. We handled it differently, as I said, from the beginning, but we handled it differently the whole way. I was mad at him many times, because I felt like, how can you go to work, and how can you go play bass at church? What are you doing? Like, we should just be here wearing black and mourning and not do anything. You know, I couldn't. It took a while for me to, I actually thought we weren't okay even at one point. So I was like trying to look at pictures and he didn't want to see them. And I thought, hope you don't want to see our baby. Like so what happened is, I can't even say that we struggled where we were like divorcing and it was that drastic. It wasn't that, but we were in a struggle where I don't feel like we understood each other in terms of what each other needed. Mm-hmm. Like other people would be the same. I can't look at that picture. He's not the only one who feels that way. And I'm like, how could you ignore the child? So we actually 100% had different views.
So he was grieving with tasks.
He was grieving by being busy. Like he went to work. Somebody finally helped me see that he had to go to work. He had to get involved. That actually, he told me later, that was a source of comfort for him, was to play for the Lord and to worship and to sing or do stuff like, and I couldn't go up there. I actually talked to our choir director and said, I can't come back. And I couldn't be in front of everybody. I felt so, so reclusive. Like I can't go in front of you guys all. I don't like you guys looking at me and my belly's not there and this is awkward. And I have a whole story about my choir director and I'm going to share it in a moment here. But the fact is that we were different. And Mercy Heart Prince, that ministry, I got to talk to a lady there a couple of times. I even went to one of their groups. Support groups are huge. I went to one of their groups, but she talked to me and she said, hey, a couple things about grief. And she said, I want you to know that you and your husband will grieve differently. And it was just air to hear that. Cause I just thought we weren't fine. Like he just clearly didn't care. And I'm devastated. Mm-hmm. Like, he totally cared, guys. He wrote her, I'll never forget, like the fact is he wasn't sharing it all with me. And I want to say that over and over and over for men, female, I think, it's not gender specific which person does that in the relationship. Mm-hmm. You can't specify. However, if you're the person who is privately dealing with it, who's staying busy or whatever, it's so important to share with your significant other sometimes, like where your heart is, what you're feeling, what you're going through. It makes such a difference. Because if he had told me that I'm dying and I'm at work and I'm crying and I'm writing her a song, he wrote her a song. Oh. It's the most beautiful song and it's for our baby. And I was like, I didn't even know. I just felt like you didn't. So when she said that to me, it gave me the courage to like go to him and be like, I'm mad and I'm holding it against you. And I feel like you don't care and whatever. He's like, I totally care. He's like, do you understand that as a man, I feel like I failed all of you. Like somehow I didn't keep her safe. Like he just was able to say things he'd never said. Mm-hmm. So it just takes time sometimes to articulate your feelings. But yeah, it affected us where I was like, we're not going to be okay. Like I even was like, I don't want to be with you. You don't care about our kid. Like I was taking it so mad.
Right.
Leaving. I was again, and we weren't there, but I was mentally starting to distance and get so upset at him. And it took that counsel when I talked to her about everything. She's like, honey, he's allowed to grieve differently than you. No, he's not. You know why? Yeah, right. He's allowed to grieve differently.
Yes.
And feel differently. So that was hugely helpful. And if that can help somebody else, you just can grieve differently. And that was our experience for sure. But we even got stronger. And then when we realized that I gave him the space to do that without feeling judgmental of him anymore, and he would organically come to me and share, do you want to hear the song I wrote her? Yes. Like, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, my heart. So you kind of discussed it a little bit, that you were offered different treatment options mm-hmm. when you were in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you wanted to go into or?
I mean, I don't know my story with, it's not like I'm not uncomfortable talking about any part of it, but I think I kind of addressed the fact that I could have, it could have been a surgery. The fact is that I do think that if it helps, we have to think past that very moment. Because in that very moment, you just want to take the easiest route possible, mm-hmm. but you have to think about your body and the healing. And so, yeah. What I felt though, is that I was very grateful. I do think some people aren't given very much of their opportunities, or they're not told what they can do or can't do, and they just have to do this or whatever. You're just numb. I remember just thinking, what do I have to do? And then, ooh, I don't like that option.
Right.
What else can we do? And I want to do something else. And they spoke up and they helped me, because they could have gone with what I said due to the fact that I was grieving. But mm-hmm. they said, this is not a good option. You're young and you can try again, and this will cause less infection, and you can do this. And I don't have much more. The only other things that I would say option wise is I was also given the options of like to have my baby tested after mm-hmm. to figure out what was wrong or whatever. And we could just take a little bit of skin and do some tests. And they looked at everything and they did not find anything genetically or chromosomally wrong. But they did say that I was in the 1% chance for this. They're like, this is an anomaly. And you're in the 1% chance of this happening to you.
That's the worst.
It is. It really makes, I mean, that just like emphasizes the I'm a failure thing. All these other women around me can do this.
Have a reason for their loss.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Over here, like, huge. No reason.
Meaning for my suffering, meaning for my loss. Mm-hmm. Like I look forward to another time when we have time to actually share with you guys about like how I healed. Mm-hmm. That's a story in itself of what happened. And like I said, my choir director is part of it. My church is a huge part of it. But I went into a dark place after I got that result. I just can't, again, I was, you know, God hates me. God hates me. You heard that. Mm-hmm. Then my husband kind of, as I said, kind of snatched that out of my spirit. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to try to praise God. I'm going to try to be who I am in Christ. And I was trying to do that, except I wasn't ready to go up there and be in front of people, but I was showing up. I remember thinking, hello, everyone. You are so lucky I'm even in the building. I did not want to be here today.
Like, you should be thankful.
I'm even here. Don't talk to me, but here I am. Like I would show up. And when I started to really struggle, like with my faith, I went through a crisis of faith for sure, was when I got the results that this was an anomaly. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the 1% chance. Cause I remember thinking, so my loss was meaningless. Like, there was no purpose to this. This was just random. God, this just happened. Like this, what is the purpose? Right. And I really, really struggled. I felt very upset. Whatever you were trying to do, God, you could have done it a different way.
I to be very honest, and I've said this in front of the church in testimony before. So I have actually a couple of times in my life, just from situations like this, dealing with infertility and miscarriage and everything, is I've actually said to him, you're kind of a jerk. Yeah. I really think you're a jerk, which I think is nice, because I think everyone thinks you always have to have like a formal relationship with God, but sometimes, and that was part of my healing too, just being able to say,
listen, my life verse right now still is Hebrews 4:16, which is, let us therefore come boldly before the throne of grace, that he may be able to give you mercy and grace to help you. When you look up that word boldly, it actually means frank, without figures of speech, unreserved. So I have this New Yorker friend who's so plain. Like, pastor will ask her, like, how you doing, sister so-and-so? She's like, I'm not doing good, pastor. I've been sleeping with men. And I've been so, and he'll just like walk away like, well, praise the Lord. I'm big on that, like being bold and frank and direct with God. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my goodness, he can totally handle it. I'm obviously not saying cuss God out.
No.
But I'm saying like, I'm mad. I'm feeling this or that. I think it's healthy.
And I know he knows.
Yeah.
My heart. So.
Yeah.
So how soon after your loss did you try again for another baby?
So we just get, I think people well-meaning, they just kept saying, please try again. This is your first. I'm sure it was a fluke or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. Like, you can try again. So we actually tried again 4 months later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. And really, it was actually necessary for my brain because I couldn't, all I kept thinking is, oh my word, maybe I can't have children. Like this
right.
is, maybe I'm not able to have kids.
And you I needed to prove to yourself.
Health, you're like, I need to know,
like, is there something wrong with, because they kept saying nothing is wrong with you. Nothing is wrong with your husband. Nothing is wrong with the baby. Everything is fine. So I just needed that, that piece of mental. So yeah, it was, we lost the baby. December 22nd is when I actually ended up, so I was saying, so close to Christmas, literally her funeral was New Year's Eve. So my holidays are sweet and salty mixes. They're just kind of packed with beautiful things. My girls are cherubs to me. I just love them. And they're so fun. And they made my life feel so rich. And then also the pain as I'm thinking about what it felt like. And remember that Christmas, remember that New Year's and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried again. Her due date was, funny enough, the sweet baby, Shania, her due date was in April. And I remember it turned out it was like April. It was literally around it sometime in April that we actually just went for it again. And then end up getting pregnant with our sweet Solana.
Yeah.
And I've had two successful, beautiful pregnancies after that. So pumped and grateful. <Yeah. laughs> And here we are again.
Gosh. So thank you for coming and sharing your story.
Oh, guys, I was so honored. Thank you for having me on the Messy Buns. I'm just pumped to be here.
We really appreciate you sharing.
So thank we you. Will be back next week, and Cammie's going to go through kind of like how she healed from this mm-hmm. tragic loss.
Yeah. I think it's so important.
Got
yeah.
through it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us for the Messy Bun Mamas podcast. If you can't wait to talk to us more, then hit us up on social media. We are on Pinterest, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
You can also reach out to us on our website at www.messybunmamaspodcast.com or email us at messybunmamaspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.
I am Messy Bun Mamas.
This is Messy Bun Mamas Podcast.
This is Messy Poop.
Messy Buns, you silly.